I like this metaphor of the handles. You know, think about all the things that you're carrying that we're not meant to carry. Think about all the beliefs we're carrying that they're just too heavy and humans are just not meant to carry them because they're false, because they're not true.
Welcome to Stoic Conversations. My name is Caleb Ontiveros.
And I'm Michael Tremblay.
And today, Michael's going to be talking about Epictetus's two handles. What's that all about?
Yeah. So famous passage from Epictetus, and we're just going to deep dive into it. It's one that a lot of people really find inspiring. So I won't beat around the bush. We'll just get right into it. And we're going to talk about the passage, what it might mean, go a little bit deeper in interpretation because it's really only about a paragraph, and then talk about how it connects with some other aspects of Stoic philosophy that we talk about. So hopefully we'll end this conversation just having a deeper understanding of the point that Epictetus is getting at here. But without any further ado, I want to jump right into the paragraph because it grounds the conversation and lets us know what we're talking about instead of talking about it abstractly. So in Epictetus's handbook, chapter 43, just a couple sentences, but it's quite a famous one. Epictetus says, and this is the Robin Hard translation, which is one that I really like and I think is accurate. Epictetus says, everything has two handles, and it may be carried by one of these handles, but not by the other. If your brother acts wrongly towards you, don't try to grasp the matter by this handle, that he is wronging you, because that is the handle by which it cannot be carried, but rather by the other, that he is your brother, he was brought up with you, and then you'll be grasping the matter by the handle by which it can be carried. So that's it. One simple paragraph for a profound idea, this idea that in any situation, there's really two ways that you can tackle it, two ways that you can think about it. One way that is ungraspable, to keep the metaphor, but one way that is, I guess, unhealthy, undesirable, psychologically difficult, and then one handle that is graspable. It allows you to tackle the situation effectively. It allows you to think about it in the right way. And so I wanted to spend some time with you, Caleb, just talking about this, what it means when we connect it with some deeper ideas in Stoic philosophy and how to understand this so you can apply it more effectively. Because it's quite compelling just on its own, just this common sense, like, hey, there's multiple ways you can think about this. Try to think about it in the healthier way. That's quite compelling on its own, but I wanted to connect it to some other ideas in Stoicism. Any thoughts you have before I dive into it?
Yeah, I think this is a good example of a passage where on the surface, it's already powerful. It's already useful. A memorable way to encapsulate the idea that situations have different interpretations. But it's also a good example of the interpretations that Epictetus gives suggests deeper Stoic theory, and as we'll get into, I think points out some of those like deeper layers to Stoicism and ones that have practical upshots. So if you're thinking about, you know, how do I interpret different situations? Well, there's a guide here, and of course there's, as we'll get into, more of this general framework that Epictetus is working from for interpreting, for generating these handles.
Yeah, that's a good point. So at the face of it, it's kind of like the dichotomy of control. It's common sense. It's the kind of thing you could tell to someone who has no interest in philosophy, and they'd be like, yeah, you know, you're probably right, or that's probably worth thinking about some more. But then you said, as you pointed out, you know, we're about applying Stoicism here. And so there becomes these questions of, well, how do I find the second handle? How do I know it's the right handle? And then that requires a deeper understanding of Epictetus to draw that out, because it's not just the second handle is not just going to be the one that makes you feel better. It's not just going to be the one that eliminates the conflict. Their second handle is, Epictetus provides this example here of thinking about, well, think about the fact that he's your brother, think about your relationship with him, and that connects with Epictetus's role ethics in a deeper way. We'll hit on that. So we'll spend some time now digging into what this means, or what I think it means in the context of Epictetus's wider philosophy. And and Caleb, feel free to jump in, interested in what you think here. So to me, this quote is a lesson on storytelling and how there is creativity to being a Stoic. It's about the opportunity we have to reinterpret impressions and to tell a different story than the impression first provides us or first gives us. So a little refresher on Stoic psychology. We have an episode on this, but it's always important to, I always like going back to Stoic psychology because living well is about thinking well. So we got to think about how we think, right? We have to reflect on how we think. So in Stoic psychology, they think the most important thing to think about is the fact that we receive an impression before anything happens, before we act, before we have a certain emotion, before we desire something, we always receive an impression. So we're observing the world, we receive a reflection of the world. If you're not a practicing Stoic, you might just act on that impression of the world immediately. You know, so your brother's insulted you and you immediately go to get revenge. If you are a practicing Stoic, you're taught to reflect upon that impression. Identify, well, that's a story about the world that you're telling yourself. Is it true? Is it something you want to believe? Is it going to be a healthy thing to believe and act upon? Does it correspond to reality? You kind of interrogate it and you ask these questions. If we assent to it as true, we say, yes, my brother has harmed me and it's a bad thing, then we experience the emotions that come along with that. We have a desire to get revenge. We set about a plan of action. It determines these kind of downstream psychological effects. And so the Stoic goal, as described by Epictetus, is to make good use of impressions. And this is often understood as assent to true impressions, dissent, or, you know, to false impressions, recognize them as false, and suspend judgment when you're unsure. So I think that Epictetus's idea of making good use of impressions is often interpreted in a defensive way. And I think it is defensive. Epictetus uses this metaphor of standing outside a gate. And you can think of making use of impressions like being at a border crossing and you're stamping passports. And you're like, this passport is true. Well, this passport is counterfeit. Get out of here. You're not coming in. These kinds of things. And that's part of making good use of impressions, but it's very defensive. It's saying, well, all I do is receive impressions and I'm just the guard at the gate. And I let in the true ones and I bump out the false ones. But I think Epictetus is pointing to a third option here with the example of the two handles, which is that we have an ability when we pause and reflect to recontextualize and change the impression. Or I think more technically, it would be something like we can actually introduce another impression because impressions are not just sense experiences. Any thoughts we have that we haven't agreed to yet, anything we contemplate or consider is an impression, right? Anything we put on the table but don't act on is an impression. So when we sit and we think about it, we're actually introducing counter impressions, counter thoughts, beliefs. We're having this kind of, well, this creative process of thinking. And when we do that, we can introduce an entirely new impression. And because the world is beautiful and good, according to the Stoics, there's always a beautiful or good or, you know, healthy way to think about the situation that we can introduce to replace the bad, false, unhealthy impression. And so I think that's the way to interpret this exercise, is the two handle exercise, is not, okay, there's not, because if it was the defensive way, it would be, well, there's one handle and think about if you want to pick it up or not, right? There's one handle. And if it's a false handle, if you know it says your brother harmed you, don't pick it up. If you think if it says, you know, you're that's your brother, you have a obligation to help them or a relationship with them, you should consider, then pick it up. But Epictetus isn't saying that. He's saying it has two handles, and the, you know, I'm stretching the metaphor here, but the thing with the handles, that's the world, that's the real event in the world, and then the handles, that's the impression, that's the story that we tell about it. And so I think there's this idea that we can tell a different story. We can make another handle if we look and if we reflect. And there's always a handle that we can create or introduce by which we can carry the situation by which we can take it up and act on it successfully. And I think a lot of other Stoic exercises can be viewed in this constructive way. So I think about things like the obstacle is the way, which is this idea of, well, when you're confronted with a situation, think, well, is there something I can learn from this? If even though it's a difficulty, is there some way that I can benefit? Is there a silver lining to the situation that can advance my character or the things that I'm wanting to improve? And then there's the view from above, which is this idea of I shift my perspective. So it seems unbearable when I'm thinking down at this perspective, but if I look up and I view myself from above, does it seem so terrible? Does it seem like such a big deal or something that I won't care about in 5 years, 10 years? Mm-hmm. So I think we shift perspective, not just to help us ourselves judge impressions as true or false, but we do it to introduce new impressions, to consider alternative things that could be true, to give ourselves a different handle to take up the event. And this leaves us with something to act upon instead of just, well, I stamped that impression as false and I have nothing to do with it. What do you think of that interpretation?
I think that's fundamentally right and well put. You know, you have this idea that you receive an impression and then you move to that stage of reflection. And it's then where you can bring to bear your past experience, past judgments, and then, as you say, introduce new impressions, new thoughts, ideas, and so on. So it started out in the example as an insult. Well, now you bring to mind the fact that this person is your brother, their family member, a number of other traits you can bring to mind. And I think that's with these Stoic maxims, you're in a sense just bringing to mind different principles that can guide not just the decisions you make, but what other additional impressions you introduce, how you interpret your situation. And that's, I suppose that's not merely a defensive project. It's one where you are, you know, shaping how you see the world. Or you could say, maybe not even, you wouldn't say shaping, you might say reminding yourself of the way the world actually is, and then setting yourself up to act in it.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if you find this, Caleb, but I talk to many people who are starting Stoicism, or I see them on the internet, on Facebook or social media, and there's this like really common thing of shutting down, I think. Like, oh, I've been practicing Stoicism and I feel like very numb. And I think that's almost need a term for that, but I think that's almost like the, you know, border patrol approach to Stoicism, right? Where it's just that defensive Stoicism. And I find myself doing that too when situations happen, is I think just like, you know, should I feel this way or not? Should I be offended or not? And it almost leaves to this kind of passivity, because the ultimate answer almost always is like, no, you shouldn't be offended. No, that can't harm you. No, that shouldn't upset you. And it ends up with this kind of negation. And when everything is negated, there's really nothing left to do. So, you know, okay, my brother harmed me. Well, Stoicism teaches me there's nothing to do there. And I kind of numb myself to that situation. And I really like here, again, I like this idea of the creativity of saying, well, look, there's a different way we can think about this, which is not just to remind yourself that your first impression is false, but that there are certain other Stoic obligations or ways of acting that come along with this. And there's a way, again, to pick up the situation, not to leave it. Again, not to say, well, I don't need to pick up this impression that my brother harmed me. I'm just going to walk away. But no, you're going to pick it up, but you're going to pick it up from a different perspective, which is that that's a family member who's struggling or some idea like this. For me, that's a pretty substantial paradigm shift. And something really clicked when I was thinking about this passage. Like, this idea to me is new, and it's like clicked, and it's something I'm going to work on. Do you find a similar way of getting defensive with your Stoicism practice? Or is that just a me thing?
No, I think a number of people will use Stoicism purely as a defensive tool, or perhaps even interpret the philosophy as a whole as a defensive one, where it's about protecting yourself from negative emotions. But it's also the philosophy also has to be offensive in the sense that it's about creating these positive emotions, the Stoics identified, and grasping onto that other handle, maybe one way to do that. And then I think, yeah, one goes through seasons where one's more in the defensive mode or not. And getting into Stoicism by using its more defensive techniques, defensive framings and so on can be useful. But one reason I found diving further into the philosophy and learning about things like rule ethics and so on was that it gives you a positive vision that you're aiming for, not just this picture of ensuring the right impressions get in and out, but that you are, you know, positively becoming a kind of person over time, and you have a target to be aiming for, something to aspire to. So yeah, I think it's certainly something I've noticed, and one reason I find these ideas about Stoic values, the positive Stoic principles, useful is that it takes you out of this purely defensive frame.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. You have a target. So your goal is not to not suffer anymore. Your goal is to be a great person. There's some content that comes with being a great person. There's some obligations, responsibilities. There's some ways of dealing with your family when they're being difficult that comes with being a great person. You know, the perfect person isn't the one who leaves family dinner the least offended. The great person, the sage, probably, you know, has some justice, some kindness, some courage to having hard conversations, or just like, you know, paying those obligations to the family that they have.
Right.
So
one other thing I wanted to say, just to connect this more to my practice, it's something I thought about, is that the defensive framing, I think, subtly shifts how you prioritize what's important in a situation. So if you get angry at someone and respond by asserting yourself or something of that sort, you might initially target your anger as that's what needs to be improved the most. And there is something to that. There's this, you know, a principle that one will make better decisions when one is not angry. But perhaps, you know, what needs to be improved is however you asserted yourself, or perhaps you asserted yourself fine and the negative judgments about your anger are bleeding into a negative judgment about your the way you asserted yourself. So there's a way in which the defensive posture can really put that focus on your own emotional reactions, other people's emotional reactions, and lose sight of the fact that what may be most important about that situation, of course, the emotional reactions go into that, but some other behavior, shifting some other decision that's less obvious may be more important still.
Okay, yeah, let's try to, like, I think that's a great example. So I'd love to ground it a little bit more, make it more concrete. So there's this idea that, because the Stoics don't encourage no emotions, right? Well, I mean, we know this. There's, you know, you don't want to be angry and vengeful, but you do want to set boundaries, for example. And let's say you set a boundary. You know, I think family is a great example. So family does something and you set a that you don't like, and you set a boundary and it upsets them. One way to think about it as a Stoic, as you said, in the defensive way, you say, well, maybe I shouldn't have set that boundary at all, because maybe I shouldn't have stood up for myself. Maybe I shouldn't have cared at all. Was there something wrong with, maybe this is the problem I have, because I think we've talked about this before. I'm a bit less assertive than you, maybe. But you think, you go, as you were saying, you pull the problem inside yourself. You say, oh, well, was the problem that I wanted to set a boundary? And then the way I'm hearing you say it is like, well, no, maybe the question is, you set that boundary in a poor way, or, you know, the way you actually acted in practice needs some improving, and the problem can exist out in the world. Doesn't have to always be about our emotions or how we're feeling. You could have manifested how you're a totally legitimate feeling in a poor way. You could have, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you set a boundary by just ignoring somebody and not getting back to them, or by being like pretty short with them in a way that was not necessary. And it's like the practicality of how you did that is the issue. And when there's a conflict, that's what you can address. Not, okay, well, was I not being a good Stoic by doing this at all?
Or another concrete example might be in failure. You might see there's that line, it's easy to be Stoic in failure, which I think one way to read it is that if someone fails initially, you might think, oh, well, that you can make that protective move. That outcome didn't matter as much. Or you can make one that is doesn't pay as much attention to your reaction to the failure, but just concretely thinks, how will I improve for next time? And it could be that spending that additional time on improvement as opposed to shifting any negative reactions or positive reactions that occurred as a result of the failure would be a better thing to do.
Yeah, this makes sense. I mean, this is the second handle, or at least part of how I'm understanding it.
Right.
So I want to bring it back to the example. One thing you mentioned was role ethics. We have a forthcoming, or I have a forthcoming conversation with Brian Johnson, who literally wrote the book on role ethics. So I'm excited to talk to him about that. But let's go back to this example and talk about, I think, how it connects with role ethics, which is especially important in Epictetus and kind of how we interact in the world and how we, have these positive obligations, not just these negative obligations to not get upset. So in the example, let's just say, I just want to make an example. So a family member acts in a cruel, selfish, or unjust way towards you, and you have an impression that you've been harmed. This is the two handles example. So maybe they insult you to the rest of your family. And then the question is, well, what do you do as a Stoic? What's the right Stoic way to act? Well, you might, as a Stoic, start to play this situation defensively, as we've talked about, and neutralize the impression, which I would say is to not pick up any handle. And so you say, well, I can't be harmed by what's outside of my control. Or you think, they may have insulted me, but I don't need a good reputation to be happy. And I think these are all true things, but I think rather these are lessons that tell us not to pick up the first handle. But what if instead we introduce the second handle, which would be ideas like, my family member is lashing out because they're struggling. Maybe this is an opportunity to help them. Or what they're saying is false, but I wonder what happened that made them feel this way, which is to say, maybe it's not true, but did I contribute it in some way that's in my control? Is there some way for me to, not aggravate somebody with this sensitivity? And so the second handle gives us an opportunity to act, not just reflect. It gives us an opportunity to exercise virtue and fulfill our roles beyond not being upset. It allows us to pick up the event and act on it without succumbing to passions. And what the content of that second handle looks like, when we want to say, well, what does that second handle look like? What should I pick up in this situation? I think that comes down to role ethics. And as we've talked about before, we have an episode on role ethics, but this is Epictetus's idea that when we're looking to what we do, we look to what to do. We look to who we are, and who we are is a number of things. We are rational beings. We have this kind of shared identity, this cosmic. If you zoom out, we all have the fact that we're people in common, and there's certain roles and obligations that come with being people. But then as you get more and more specific, there's more and more specific roles. You have your relationship to your family, and that brings certain obligations, your relationships to your coworkers, to your friends. And then we might even, according to Epictetus, have certain obligations depending on our talents or our interests. So a kind of a role to pursue what we're naturally good at or naturally interested at, and a reason to pursue that, all else being equal. And so I think that's why the brother example is so important here. When Epictetus describes the other handle, it's like, consider that he is your brother, that he was brought up by you, and then grasp the matter by this handle, which it can be carried. And I think what this is Epictetus saying, look, if we zoom out to the cosmic perspective of being, you're just a rational human being, well, then, yeah, you don't need a good reputation to be happy because virtue is all that matters. You can't be harmed by what's outside of your control. And, certainly what your family thinks of you is not up to you, when we talk about up to you in that strong, robust sense. But there is this other perspective that you can approach the situation from, which is the perspective of your role as a brother or sister, your role as an immediate family member, and the context that come with that, that you were brought up together. You know, what do you know about this person? What have you experienced together? And what kind of obligations come from that? And so I think this is Epictetus's reminder to, I might be reading into this and a little bit. I don't want to overinterpret, but I certainly think this is what he's alluding to, is to not, don't think of it the wrong way, but then also don't think of it in this kind of zoomed out perspective, but apply your role to the situation. And if you think about it in terms of your role, then you can pick it up, you can act upon it, you can be proactive in the situation, and how you should act becomes apparent. Because if all you're thinking is, well, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. If this is all you're thinking about when somebody insults you, there's nothing to do than just not be insulted, right? But if you think, ah, oh, that's my brother. You know, I know what happened to them when we were kids that makes them the kind of person that gets like this. I know how to help them because they're family. I have intimate knowledge of that. If you bring that kind of perspective in, then these obligations or these ways of acting reveal themselves. And the unfortunate thing about Stoicism is those are all going to be really particular, right? Neither of us can sit here and tell anybody how to behave with their brother or their sister or their parents, right? Like maybe the best thing to do is to cut yourself off. Maybe the best thing to do is to help a lot more than you're helping. That's all just going to be particular. But what it looks like reveals itself when you think about it in a role ethics perspective. You think about it in that level. That's when you can discover the second handle, I think.
Yeah. Well put and very important. Maybe one way to try, I'll try boil it down fundamentally and then let me know what you think about this. So I think in a way, the first handle is all about beliefs that the external world can harm me. And there are many Stoic principles, Stoic strategies for dissolving that belief. You know, you can't be harmed by what's outside of your control. What you are is the kind of thing that is not harmed by externals. You have these kinds of principles, and you know, you have a past history of not giving in to adversity, and you can use that as motivation to continue to persist. That's how you might address that in a defensive manner. But this second handle is, if you want to put it in the traditional Stoic sense, nature has given you a part to play in this situation. And the next move is to just remind yourself of, you know, what are the facts of the situation and what are my roles? And then how do I play that part well? How do I make those decisions that amounts to me living in accordance with nature and the traditional Stoic sense? Another way to put it is just that, you know, more simply, whatever situation you find yourself in, you have a role to play, or there is a virtuous next action. And then grasping on to that side of the situation, as it were, is what can guide one into positive action.
Yeah, I think that was well summarized. And there's that other point there that it's bearable, right? Like you can always carry that handle. You can always carry that load.
Right.
It's not like, oh, well, you know, one handle is woe is me. Things are sad. And the other handle is you have this like unbelievable, unbearable task in front of you that is also anxiety inducing. The other handle is this is yeah, you have a role to play, but that role to play is doable. It's bearable. If you think about it in the proper way, it should be, you know, joyful. Actually, it should be a pleasure to do, right? Because you're exercising what you are meant to do. You're exercising what you particularly have the ability to do. Again, grounding in the example of your family, you particularly might know how to help, or you particularly might know how to navigate the situation well, or what that person needs,
or
you know what you need, given the history. But that situation is bearable, and that situation is I mean, I guess bearable in like keeping the metaphor. It's the kind of thing you can carry over time. You can continue to use, and because You know, I like this. I like this metaphor of the handles. You know, think about all the things that you're carrying that are, we're not meant to carry. Think about all the beliefs we're carrying that they're just too heavy and humans are just not meant to carry them because they're false, because they're not true. And, you know, put them down basically is step one of Stoicism. It would just be like, look, you know, you can't carry these. I'm imagining someone with all the grocery bags, you know, you can't carry them this. You know, you need this. But if you put them like this, you can be yourself. And it's this idea of you're the exact same person pre-Stoicism and post-Stoicism. You're carrying the exact same amount of weight. You've just the exact same amount of obligations, relationships, roles, but you've just rearranged the weight. You know, maybe you've put it in a backpack. Maybe you've got it against, on a wooden staff across your back, like a squat bar. You've arranged in a way that you can carry it and that it's bearable and sustainable. And I think that's an interesting metaphor, this kind of like rearrangement of beliefs. I'm pushing the metaphor here, but this rearrangement of the way that you respond to the world so that it becomes bearable, becomes carryable, instead of our initial one where it's like, I can't do this. I can't care about my family. I can't be in this because it's just too painful, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, it's unbearable because of the way that you're holding it, because of the way that you're grasping it. But if you switch to a different way of reflecting on it, it will be bearable. Yeah.
No, I think that's right. And it brings out some of the references to Stoic theory, which is this idea that you can live well in whatever circumstance, because living well is a matter of acting virtuously. I think that's what's implied by the principle that there is a handle in any situation that can be carried, that can be used. You know, that's a reference to the Stoic picture that you can be happy in any situation that you find yourself in. And remind yourself that others have been in situations that have been similar and been able to grasp onto the positive interpretation of their situation and act well. So, yeah, I think that's an inspiring one and a useful metaphor.
Yeah, and then maybe, you know, easier lives are lighter weights, but even the light weights, you know, even if something's 20 pounds, if the handle is like, I don't know, is whatever, slippery or not easily graspable, you could drop these things. And then if the weight is 200 pounds, well, you just need to make sure the handle is the perfectly arranged and then it is bearable. As you said, somebody else has carried it before. And the Stoic example here would be that everybody's kind of the same strength. It's not like, well, that person's bigger than me, because we're all people with rational faculties. We all have access to the ability to reflect, to think carefully. So it's not like, oh, well, they're 300 pounds. Of course they can pick this up. What am I going to do? It's like, well, no, you're just as strong as them. You just need to figure out how to access that by practicing Stoicism, right? Mm-hmm. Great. So yeah, no, that is inspiring. I feel motivated. gonna go out and embrace the day with trying to pick more things up. I think that's definitely my takeaway from this is not, I think I've done enough Stoicism that I know not to pick up the wrong handle, but I'm going to try to pick up more right handles. I'm going to try to pick up more second handles is my takeaway. And I wanted to connect this. I wanted to connect this to apart from Marcus Aurelius, because, you know, it's not just an Epictetus thing that connects throughout the Stoics. So one thing we like to talk about, and Caleb, you really introduced me to this exercise. I never thought about it too much until we started chatting on here. But this reminds me of Marcus Aurelius's decomposition exercise. So that's when Marcus Aurelius talks about breaking things down into their core parts. So there's that famous quote where he talks about the royal robe of the Romans, or the emperor's robe. That's a purple robe. It's just sheep's wool dyed with the blood of shellfish. Or there's this metaphor, you know, he's at a feast and he's like, this is just a dead pig on the table. This is just the carcass of an animal. So this idea of breaking things down, You know, I like to think of this idea of, like, you know, an insult is just the sound made by somebody's throat, or, you know, the sound made by an animal's throat. And if you think of that in, like, a objective terms, it's like, why is that ruining my day? It's the kind of air waves in the air made by a set of lungs. That's the decomposition technique. And so that you end with this description. But I think the two handle exercise, and I think that's the ultimate defensive posture, right? It's to deconstruct everything until it has no meaning that can hurt you. And I think that's really good if you're the kind of person who's getting hurt all the time. It's really good if you're the kind of person that's feeling very sensitive to things or getting caught up in stories. But I think the two handle exercise is this idea to, okay, well, let's add an interpretation. We've stripped away the false story. So let's add a story, or let's add a way of thinking about the situation that involves you and involves some obligations and some actions. This is this idea that, you know, don't think about it. You know, if your brother's harmed you, don't think about the decomposition exercise would be, you know, a person has done what they think is right, or a person has acted the way people tend to act, something like this. And it's like, no, well, introduce a new story. He is your brother. You were brought up together. Reintroduce an interpretation or some perspective to it. And when you do that, that's you layering back on your roles. So you're not stopping at the decomposition. You're layering back on your roles, your responsibilities. And then that gives you something to pick up and something to act on. And I think it's a good complement to the decomposition technique. And then which one you need to practice depends on, you know, it depends on how the situation, depends on how frustrated you are, and depends on your level of progress. Maybe if you're starting stoicism, okay, you're caught up in a lot, you're very anxious all the time, let's just work on decomposition. But then you're at this point where you're starting to feel like, okay, well, you know, I'm numb, or I'm defensive, or I stoicism is making me not care about things. Okay, well, let's start looking for that second handle. Let's start picking things up again with some healthy ways to act upon them, healthy ways to introduce ourselves. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that seems on point. If you want to connect this to Marcus Aurelius some more, you know, often reminding himself not to tell himself anything more than what his primary representation is telling him. And that's that idea to see things as they are in an objective and impartial way. And it's a protective posture, not just against these false negative stories we tell ourselves, but also very likely positive ones other people might be telling himself, or ones that he might be telling himself about his power, his position, that may also be false. You know, Seneca always has that reminder not to trust prosperity, and many of these positive stories can be misleading too. So then there's that reminder to return to the, you know, this impression stripped down in its essence. You know, what's the world telling you? And he does that again and again in the meditations. But he also reminds himself to, you know, he has this line, if you leave all of the past behind you, if you abandon the future to providence, and if you arrange the present in accordance with piety and justice, all the happiness you are seeking by such a long roundabout way, you can have it all right now. And that reminder, I think, of piety and justice is another way to grasp onto the second handle that we've been talking about. It's that picture of, you know, thinking about the world as a place that's provided for his happiness, is a beautiful place, and then he has the ability to act with justice in whatever situation. And that's where you know, you get this positive stance towards the world. I think that's where you get not just the defensive aspect, but the one that points you, guides your actions. And if you can get into the flow where your actions start matching that, then you're making serious progress on the stoic path, I think.
Yeah, that's great. So maybe I've been talking about the second handle as being pretty particular. You know, think about the fact that they're your brother. I don't know. Think about what happened between the two of you in grade seven. And your point is something along the lines of, well, there can be the second handle that's also cosmic, or the second handle that's also, there can be another way to think about the world that doesn't, it's ultimately going to connect with our roles, right? Because it's going to be proactive, but it doesn't just have to be these very particular roles. It can be still, well, I'm going to think about this from, you know, by connecting with kind of piety, God, justice, these kinds of things come through this kind of perspective as well. Is that what you meant?
Right, right. I think there's a, you made this point earlier and before we started recording that you have these different level of roles, and I suppose you can latch on to either the more specific one, you know, these are the roles given my specific relationships, specific circumstance, mm-hmm. or these more broad roles that are given by human nature, by nature itself, this focus on act virtuously. And I think both of those can play the role of being action guiding, or at least reminding you, pointing you towards the right action. I think there is perhaps some reason to get, you know, eventually you need to get more specific, but those more general reminders can center you to ask those more specific questions. So in your example of the situation of the brother, you might, instead of thinking about when they insult you, well, I can't be harmed by what's outside of my control. Instead, you might be thinking, my brother, they're lashing out because they're struggling, or they have this kind of behavioral pattern. That's sort of specific insight. But then there's that question, what brought you to that insight? Maybe you were able to ground yourself in a more general way. And then from there, move to, my role is to be an excellent brother. Because you reminded yourself that, you know, my role is just to be virtuous in this situation. What does that look like? It looks like being cool. An excellent brother. Well, you know, what can I remind myself of? I know he's struggling because, you know, he has this behavior pattern, and, you know, my next move is probably this, and so on.
So what I was thinking from that is that you can always kind of abstract out a level. Like, I don't want people listening to this episode and being like, okay, well, I can either, the second handle only exists if it's like my best friend and I know exactly what to do with them. You know, even if it's somebody you're just meeting or somebody that you don't know super well, there's this idea of, well, you can always just, you know, yeah, you know best how to handle your best friend. But if it's even just a random person, you can think of them at the level of just a person, right? And we have this obligation to be just and to be pro-social, to be kind, right? And so you can abstract out a level, and that will reveal a kind of a second handle, a second way to take the situation up, even if they're not, you know, we were grounding this in a family example, and you know your family so well, and you have such clear ties to them, but you can have those ties to a random person that you meet for the first time. Just that tie is at the level of person to person, not at the level of, brother to sister or something like this. And there's certain obligations that come from that, or certain, you know, yeah, just, and by obligations, I mean, like, you know, ways that you, things you want to do to be a good person, right? Not these restrictions, but just like, if you want to act virtuously, if you want to be a great person would be kind here, or a great person would be just here. I think I use that kind of obligation language a lot when we talk about roles, but it is important to think of them as being proactive, not this requirement or this weight over you, but just to say, if you're going to be, when I say an obligation, I just mean like the same way when we talk about like a great basketball player does this. And if you don't do that, if you don't show up to the game, you're not a great basketball player. So a great basketball player has the obligation to show up. That's what I'm saying. Like when I say you have obligations, I'm saying a great brother does this kind of thing. And if you want to be a great brother, you're going to do these great kind of things as well. Great. I thought that anything else you wanted to add on the two handles? I thought that was that's the nice thing about Epictetus's handbook, is because it's like because it's a summary of the discourses in a way. It, as you said, I think you put it really well. It's the kind of thing that can be, I recommend it to people. I think it's the kind of thing that can be really common sense, kind of inspiring when you read it as a non-Stoic. But most of these things you can dig into a lot deeper as well. Well, almost that. Certainly all of them you can dig into a lot deeper. So That was a deep dive in just a couple sentences, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're newer to Stoicism, it's always the handbook is useful for getting some of these practical techniques, getting an initial picture of what Stoicism is. And then if something, if you're more experienced with Stoicism, returning to the handbook and walking through that exercise of, what are those deeper ideas? What kind of Stoic theory is Epictetus referencing here in these nuggets is a good one.
Well, let me just read it again, then let's end it. Let's end on the paragraph again and see if it has a different context for those listening or comes off a bit different. So this is, again, it's chapter 43. Everything has two handles, and it may be carried by one of these handles, but not by the other. If your brother acts wrongly towards you, don't try to grasp the matter by this handle, that he is wronging you, because that is the handle by which it cannot be carried, but rather by the other, that he is your brother, he was brought up with you, and then you'll be grasping the matter by the handle by which it can be carried.
Awesome. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Stoic Conversations. Please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and share it with a friend. If you want to dive deeper still, search Stoa in the App Store or Play Store for a complete app with routines, meditations, and lessons designed to help people become more Stoic. And I'd also like to thank Michael Levy for graciously letting us use his music. You can find more of his work at ancientliar.com. And finally, please get in touch with us. Send a message to stoa@stoameditation.com if you ever have any feedback, questions, or recommendations. Until next time.